middle of the road is no private cul-de-sac.
Hi, this is Chris France of Talking Heads, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
Here are the headlines for Tuesday, January 31st. President Biden will end the twin national emergencies for addressing COVID-19 on May 11th. That would formally restructure the federal coronavirus response. About 3,700 people in the United States died from COVID-19 last week. Laverne and Shirley actor Cindy Williams died at 75, it was announced on January 30th. National Catholic Organization honors Ellen Schoenborn, a Coxsackie student at the Academy of Holy Names, for her work feeding the hungry. The teenager started Project Ella, a sandwich-making operation in her home that has distributed more than 7,000 meals and hundreds of thousands of food pantry items to the needy. Newspaper owner and editor Perry Teasdale has agreed to sell the Columbia paper. The weekly newspaper and news website columbiapaper.com to Capital Region Independent Media, LLC, for an undisclosed amount. They plan to continue to operate the newspaper in Columbia County. A Siena College Research Institute poll finds that more than 70% of New Yorkers favor expansion of bottle recycling and an increase in the deposit to 10 cents. At the deadline, January 30th, Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed an expansion of New York's wrongful death law. The insurance industry and medical groups had opposed the bill, claiming it would cause higher insurance premiums. On February 1st, Governor Kathy Hochul will unveil her new budget proposal. And a cold front is expected to drop temperatures locally into single digits this weekend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acro with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, January 30th. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. There were protests around the United States and locally in Troy and Hudson after police in Memphis released videos on January 27th showing at least five police officers savagely beating Tyree Nichols, who eventually died from the attack. Marquetta Edwards, one of the organizers of the Troy protest on January 28th, was recorded speaking by the Times Union's H. Rose Schneider, saying,
"We cannot continue this. We got to start working in silos. The people that are here today have to work together. We are all from different communities, all from different backgrounds, all from different organizations, but guess what? We're here. Because this matters. Our lives matter. Black lives matter. And we will not stand down out here today."
In Hudson, over 60 people turned out to the park in front of the Columbia County Courthouse on January 29th to protest the latest police killing caught on a video recording. Several local youths spoke at the event, including a 17-year-old named Gabby.
"This behavior is institutionalized within our police system, and when behavior is institutionalized, it can't be fixed until it's broken down and built back up again, and we can't do that without the support of more people."
A few local officials were there, including State Senator Michelle Hinchey, Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett, and Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson. Claire Cousins, a member of the County Board of Supervisors from Hudson, urged the other politicians who were not there to come out next time.
"My call to action for those folks is your colleagues need to join you in these moments. I love you deeply. Where are your colleagues that had the same morals as you? Why are they not outraged enough to join you here? That is the wall of distrust that exists that we want to break down.
It's not you, it's all of you. It's everybody that has taken that oath. We want to see you. We deserve to see you angry if you care about us the way that you say you do.
Tyler O'Neill is reporting for Spectrum News that Democrat U.S. Representative Pat Ryan was appointed January 27th to the House Committee on Armed Services and the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, his office said. Ryan represents the redrawn 18th Congressional District. The Armed Services Committee handles defense policy, military operations, and the organization and reform of the Department of Defense and Department of Energy. Ryan served on this committee during his previous term. Quote, I maintain my commitment to ensuring our service members and military families are properly supported to preserve and promote America's security, prosperity, and values both at home and abroad, unquote, he said. Ryan served in the U.S. Army as a combat intelligence officer from 2004 to 2009, including two tours in Iraq. The congressperson will also serve on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, which oversees all modes of transportation nationwide. Quote, whether you take Metro North to New York City, travel Route 17 through Orange County, or need improved broadband in Dutchess County, I will fight every day to make sure that funding comes right back here to the Hudson Valley, unquote, Ryan said in a statement. Read more about this story at spectrumlocalnews.com. Jamel Cutler is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Hudson City Hall is set to undergo needed renovations, according to a resolution recently adopted by the Common Council. The resolution authorized the mayor to enter into a contract with VMJR Companies of Glens Falls to complete the alterations required to bring the historic former bank building into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The cost of the project is $669,500, and the resolution authorizes expenditure of $337,933 from the general fund. Construction is expected to begin in February, and the work will be completed in 3 or 4 months. Changes to the building's facade include removing the marble steps that lead to the side door of the building and dropping the door to sidewalk level. The existing door will continue to be used, and the marble plinths and pilasters on either side of the door will remain unchanged. Quote, the improvements will make access to the second floor a lot easier for folks, unquote, said Mayor Kamal Johnson. Quote, I'm happy that we're finally getting to this point as a city, unquote. The renovations will make the building more accessible, and the general environment is going to be more inviting for everyone, he said. VMJR has completed similar projects at locations throughout upstate New York, at the University at Albany, Siena College, and the State Education Building in Middleburg Central School. In Hudson, the company successfully completed the St. Paul's St. Mary's Church historical restoration. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Hello, and welcome to the better weather for Monday, January 30th. We are 6.5% of the way through the year. We have 49 days left until spring. That time of year, I start talking about the river, the tides, the warm breezes, and healthy fun, and I want you to hold on to that thought as you go around the house today with the gap filler and caulking gun getting ready for the serious temperature drop on Friday night. Speaking of temperatures, local early morning temperatures range from 28 degrees in Dover Plains to 36 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 34 degrees. Today will be mostly cloudy with a high of 42 happening at 3 p.m. Conditions will be cold. Layer up. Make sure it's waterproof. Rain chances show up around 2 p.m. and continue overnight, turning to snow, leaving a dusting and ending by dawn when we see a low temperature of 26. Tomorrow, freezing with some wind gusts and a high of 32 at 3 p.m. Overnight, the dip deepens, hitting 19 degrees. Wednesday, we hit 32 again, but it gets a little sunnier. Thursday, we get a fake out as high temperatures are expected to hit 39. And I generally don't like looking this far into the future, but Friday night temperatures will be in the pipe-bursting and battery-killing range, you have been warned. Sunset today will be at 4:52 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:06 a.m. Looking way up, we see things are relatively quiet, flare chances are down, but coming in at 6 kilometers across, Comet 96P is hurtling towards the sun, due to make its closest approach next week. Its alien composition has piqued astronomers' interests, and the SOHO satellite will be conducting extra research as it passes. Solar wind speed is currently 407 kilometers per second at 7.5 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, with fair conditions below 60 MHz overnight and possibly good conditions below 8 MHz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 80, and this is Man the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Our hearts go out to the family, but this has become a maddening deja vu of Black mothers, of Black parents wailing for their children, and a community collectively grieving and mourning.
Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts says it will take great political will to change policing in America and end the incidents of police violence, which led to the death of 29-year-old Tyree Nichols of Memphis. President Biden will meet with members of the Congressional Black Caucus this week to discuss what it says are much-needed national reforms to the justice system. Meanwhile, the parents of Tyree Nichols will reportedly attend President Biden's State of the Union address on February 7th.
When anyone goes to the grocery store this week, you can blame everybody in D.C. that's not willing to live within our means for your interest rates going up and the cost of your eggs and meat going up.
Senator Rick Scott of Florida and members of the Senate Republican Conference say they will not vote for any bill to raise the nation's debt limit unless it's tied to significant budget cuts. The senators say meaningful structural reform in spending is needed to address the nation's $31 trillion debt. Nearly $5.5 billion of COVID-19 aid may have been awarded to small businesses with ineligible Social Security numbers.
There's an urgency to get the money out, and so you may not do the same level of due diligence before writing those checks.
Sean Moulton with the Project on Government Oversight says much of the abuse is connected to the government's Paycheck Protection Program.
Redistricting is like an election in reverse. Usually the voters get to pick the politicians. In redistricting, the politicians get to pick the voters.
Former GOP strategist Tom Hofeller was known as the master of the modern gerrymander, and his impact still resonates today. The Democracy Docket says unresolved legal challenges to redrawn political maps could play a big role in 2024 congressional elections. Litigation is ongoing in 15 states, including New York and Texas, and their combined 64 congressional seats.
When and if this vote comes, it will be a moment of clarity. And I hope many of these Republicans will have conscience.
Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar says she looks forward to a floor vote regarding her reappointment to the House Foreign Affairs Committee. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is leading efforts to unseat Omar based on her previous comments regarding Israel. However, three Republicans now say they will oppose McCarthy's efforts. The House is poised to vote Tuesday on a bill titled the Pandemic is Over Act, though President Biden has announced he will end the twin national emergencies addressing the COVID-19 pandemic on May 11th. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're spending a second day in Arizona, where a seasoned election official resigned last week, citing a hostile workplace. That hostility, though, extends beyond Arizona and throughout the United States, and bipartisan bills are being filed in some states to protect an election workforce put at risk by disinformation. VoteBeat Arizona reports that Lisa Mara, a 5-year veteran elections director for Cochise County, has resigned, citing a physically and emotionally threatening working environment. During a conspiracy theory-fueled effort to hand-count the November 2022 election, Mara refused direct orders from 3 misguided county officials to turn over the ballots, which Mara maintained was a felony. Election officials throughout the country have been threatened, followed, publicly disparaged, had their personal information made public, and personally sued as a result of just being election officials doing their jobs. Many have quit. Independent news organization The 19th reports that state legislatures are waking up to the loss of experienced election workers and are proposing bipartisan bills to add protections prior to 2024. Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, and New Hampshire have all taken steps to protect election workers from intimidation or have helped to secure their personal information. We have links to that legislation and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Do I love to?
This morning we heard Elevation earlier from Television, and that was Guiding Light from Television, whose guitarist and songwriter Tom Verlaine passed away over the weekend. Spike Priggen will have a tribute to Tom Verlaine and Television Wednesday, February 1st at noon on the Bedazzled Radio Hour until 2 p.m. And today at noon on All Mixed Up, there is a tribute to David Crosby, who passed away last week. On Saturday, February 4th, turn out or tune in for live performances from local singer-songwriters Lex Gray and Ryder Cooley. Both Lex Gray and Ryder Cooley perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Saturday, February 4th, and WGXC will also have a live web stream and a broadcast of the performances from two local band leaders, Lex Gray from the Urban Pioneers and Ryder Cooley from the Dust Bowl Fairies. Both perform Saturday, February 4th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Turn out or tune in to hear the performances on 90.7 FM at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. From Catskill, this next song is Ain't From Mississippi by Catskill's Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers.
Miami dream. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Laura Schindel, who is one of the New York senior organizers at Food and Water Watch. And there is a hearing taking place on Tuesday, January 31st by DEC about the Iroquois Enhancement by Compression Project, which is a gas pipeline that runs through the northern New York, including the Capital District, and I guess down to Connecticut and down to the lower part of the state. And they're looking to put a bunch of compressors in, including in Athens and Dover, the two of the four that are closest to us. So, Laura, why should people be concerned about this proposal?
Well, thanks, Mark, for covering this important topic. There's a multitude of reasons to be concerned. I'll start with, you know, local impacts and then broaden out to why we don't need more fossil fuel infrastructure in the first place. But this proposal aims to drastically increase the amount of gas that is pushed through an existing and aging pipeline. It's the so-called Iroquois pipeline. And we always put that in quotation since it's not the Iroquois people's pipeline. But that pipeline's been around 37 years, and now the company wants to drastically increase the amount of gas that gets pushed through it, which creates an inherent risk for the communities along that whole route of the pipeline from northern New York down through Connecticut, Long Island, and New York City. And in order to push more gas through that pipeline, like you mentioned, they aim to do a build out of compressor stations, two of which are proposed in New York, in Athens, and in Dover. Compressor stations are very loud and very polluting to the air. And so they're really a disruption and a toxic influence on the communities where they're built. And the other piece of it more broadly of why we should be concerned about this is that New York State is supposed to be moving to a renewable energy future, and increasing and building new fossil fuel infrastructure is totally antithetical to that. Now, the company claims they need to deliver more gas to downstate, to New York City and Long Island, but there have been local laws that have been passed that should be decreasing the demand for gas. In New York City, there was a law passed in 2021 that requires all new construction of buildings be all electric. So no more gas hookups. So that should be decreasing the need for more gas, as well as efficiency measures passed at the city level as well. So the there's no need for this gas, and it's antithetical to the state's climate law.
Well, this seems like a bit of a, you know, slam dunk here. As you point out, you know, DEC as a state environmental agency should be making plans about how to phase out, you know, the use of gas, not allow companies to do business as usual. In fact, expand the use. You know, has, you know, the Governor Hochul's people, you know, sort of weighed in and, you know, made it clear that this is something that they expect the state agencies to fall in line with now that the state law has been passed to reduce the use of fossil fuel emissions in New York State?
We haven't heard anything from Governor Hochul's administration directly, but in the DEC's notice for this upcoming hearing happening on Tuesday, the 31st, the DEC does use language that would imply they're ready to approve as long as the company's able to meet X, Y, and Z standards. So it was written in such a way that looks like if we do not speak out and if we do not form the public pressure and movement that is always necessary to stop these sorts of proposals, that it likely would get greenlit, because the industry is always very effective at making huge infrastructure projects seem like small, inconsequential projects. And we just know that's not true. I would not, it's a slam dunk if you think about it in terms of the facts on our side. But if politicians and agencies always made decisions based on science and facts, we wouldn't be in the climate crisis that we're in right now.
Usually with gas pipelines, especially gas pipelines that go across state boundaries, you mentioned two of the compressor stations are going to be in Connecticut. Doesn't the federal government usually step in and regulate this, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission? So what's the role of the state in this situation?
That's exactly right, Mark. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, does have a role to play in the permitting since it's an interstate project. And in fact, the pipeline starts in Canada and then goes into New York and Connecticut. However, we know that that federal agency, FERC, always rubber stamps infrastructure proposals. They're very much in the pocket of the industry. Every time we've stopped a fossil fuel infrastructure proposal in New York State, from power plants to pipelines, it's been at the state level. And so the Department of Environmental Conservation at the state level in New York is tasked with approving or denying the air permits required for these new compressor station buildouts. And so that's what specifically this hearing is on for Tuesday, the 31st, is that the New York State DEC will be considering whether or not to give air permits to these compressor stations. And we expect that that is the mechanism of the way we can stop the project, rather than appealing to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, who are usually much more difficult to influence.
Now, this hearing is taking place on Tuesday, January 31st at 6 p.m. I know it's too late for people to sign up to speak for this hearing, but if people wish to express an opinion one way or the other, how can they find out more information about this project and how can they be heard on this issue?
Thanks for asking that important question. There is written comments that people can submit to the DEC up until February 7th. We're working to get that extended, but in the meantime, that is the case. And if people would like to file written comments, they would email the following email address with their comments up until February 7th. The email address to send their comment to is depenergy@dec.ny.gov. And they can email their written comments up until February 7th at 5 p.m. And between written comments and lots of people testifying at hearings, that's the way that we're able to really show public pressure and public momentum and have that on the record to give our agencies and politicians the backbone to deny these sorts of projects and stand up to the industry.
Well, we only have about a minute left talking with Laura Shindell, senior organizer at Food and Water Watch. I saw a whole bunch of Food and Water Watch people down at the state capitol, I believe last Tuesday, saying that the state needs to ban gas in new buildings, All Electric Buildings Act. Can you give us, 45 seconds on why that's important?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, so buildings are New York State's biggest portion of greenhouse gas emissions. And so at the city level last year, we passed legislation that bans new fossil fuel hookups from new construction. So if you're going to build a brand new building, just build it right the first time, build it all electric, so that you don't have to retrofit it later. So we're working to pass that same legislation at the state level, so that our transition to electric and a renewable energy future can be that much easier. It's the low-hanging fruit. Just build new construction the sustainable right way the first time. It's very popular and common sense legislation. There were several dozen legislators in support of the rally that you mentioned on Tuesday, with well over 50 co-sponsors.
This has been Laura Shindell, Food and Water Watch, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
They couldn't hear this song.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Greta Jockum is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle. Xylazine, an animal tranquilizer, is being increasingly found in the illegal drug supply in New England, including in the Berkshires. Jessica Kelly, Prevention Services Supervisor at Berkshire Harm Reduction, said 1 year ago she would find the veterinary sedative in one of 20 bags of heroin. Today, Kelly estimates it is present in 1 in 7 bags. The drug is not an opiate, so it does not respond to opiate overdose reversal medications like naloxone. Stephen Murray, an overdose researcher at Boston Medical Center, said the drug is a major concern along the I-91 corridor. The drug was first found in the drug supply in the early 2000s in Puerto Rico, and the Massachusetts Drug Supply Stream Program discovered it in the opioid supply in mid-2021. The drug is approved for veterinary use only, and when taken by humans, it is extremely dangerous. Dr. Jennifer Michaels, medical director for the Bren Center, said, and I quote, "The scary thing about xylazine is that naloxone and Narcan doesn't reverse the overdose," end quote. Michaels said because it is a sedative, the drug can increase the risk of overdose by suppressing breathing, heart rate, and blood pressure. It can also cause severe wounds. The drug seems to be toxic to the skin and tissue underneath it. Michael said people can fall asleep or be unconscious for hours lying on a body part like an arm, decreasing blood supply to it. When injected, the drug can cause pain. Kelly said, and I quote, "I've had multiple people report it feels like worms crawling in their skin, which causes a lot of picking and causes more infection rates and abscesses too," end quote. Researchers do not know as much about xylazine as they want to. As its use has spread across New England, there has not been enough time to study it. Michael said routine drug screening for individuals at the Bren Center do not test for xylazine. And I quote, "We don't really know how much it has infiltrated our patients' substance supply," end quote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Kenneth C. Crow II reports in the Times Union that the State Department of Environmental Conservation is continuing to clean up the PFAS at Taconic Plastics in Petersburg in Rensselaer County. The DEC is working at the plant at 136 Coon Brook Road, just west of Route 22 and south of Route 2 since 2016. The agency said in a recent community update, and I quote, "DEC approved a supplemental investigation work plan in August 2021, which requires Taconic to perform additional sampling of contaminated soils, groundwater, and surface water in the vicinity of Building 1 with the objective of assessing options for an interim remedial measure at the site," end quote. The DEC says it is still working on sediment and subsurface soil removal, backfill, and swale reconstruction behind Building 1, with plans to complete the interim remediation in 2023. PFAS is a poisonous so-called, and I quote, "forever chemical," end quote, that is difficult to break down and is linked to some forms of cancer. It can be found locally in drinking water in Cairo, New Lebanon, Hoosick Falls, Nassau, and other communities. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that 7 Republicans in the state assembly have announced support for a bill to give free meals to students in all New York State schools. That signals it has a good chance to pass this year, with more than 70 members of the state legislature signing letters of support for the universal school meals proposal. State Senator Michelle Hinchey and Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez Rojas, both Democrats, introduced the bill. Governor Kathy Hochul will outline her budget proposal February 1st in Albany, and many lawmakers hope the free meals provision will be included in the plan. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button. to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The world goes. tell the screamer hurt. And I scream, I scream, I scream.